Sunday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And I got to be honest with you, we are a little bit behind. I'm about a week behind. Last week's segments have not been put up on the podcast. Please be patient. I've been very busy.
I know, I'm kidding.
Just like everybody else, dealing with the snow. If I'm not here doing something in some capacity, I'm up on the roof shoveling. It's just is never ending, Joe. So we'll do our best to get it up. Get it up on the podcast site so folks will be able to listen to it. And we've got over 460 episodes that are up, and we thank the folks who do check out the podcast site to hear all of our great guests. And we've had a lot of great guests this evening. Mm. The night is still young. Still young, okay? And joining us right now is WATD's chief meteorologist.
What a glow.
A really good guy. None other than Mr. Rob Gilman. Rob, how are you?
I'm not singing in the rain, but otherwise great.
But is this not your favorite song?
I got a million of them.
Okay. Well, we thought it was
the
appropriate.
Beatles song, Here Comes the Sun. There was a video of a National Guard group, and boy, haven't they been doing a great job. Just absolutely nailing that song. And that, if you listen to the lyrics of Here Comes the Sun, we really need that.
I definitely agree. Now, other than being the chief meteorologist here, you're also the co-owner of Precision Weather Forecasting, correct?
Yes, sir.
Talk to us a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Folks know you for, the guy who tells us what's going on, right to the point as to South Shore weather. Give us some insight to yourself.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here, along with Joe Rossi. Joe and I have had some shared experiences here along coastal Massachusetts in recent years.
Yes.
Joe does an unbelievable job as a volunteer. I mean, he puts so many hours in, and so many people have benefited by his efforts. So thank you, Joe, and thank you, Kevin, for having me. It's an awesome following Governor Baker. What did he step into? But myself, I've been fascinated with weather just about as far back as I can remember. And I think if you speak to most meteorologists, especially synoptic meteorologists, those of us that try to figure out what's going on the surface of the planet under the atmosphere, there are many different types of meteorologists, different types of the science that we study. But if you speak to, the people you see providing you with weather information on television, people that are working behind the scenes at your airlines, making sure the planes are getting where they're supposed to be going, they'll tell you that, this is something that's been with them their whole lives. There's probably 10 or 20% of the population that's that way, that's just a little bit beyond when it comes to trying to figure out what's going on with the weather and what's coming next. And that's the way I've always been. I grew up in Dorchester and went to a lot of different types of schools back in the 60s, because Dorchester and Boston in the 60s was going through some very turbulent times. And it was, it was also the time that the media was changing dramatically, and weather was being presented in very different ways. People like Don Kent and Bob Copeland suddenly were professional weather presenters on Channel 4 and Channel 5, and Channel 5 just came on the air in the early 60s. So things were changing, to what we're more accustomed to seeing now, someone with an education in atmospheric science presenting weather information. And, for a kid trying to figure out whether there was going to be school the next day, that was fascinating. And looking out the window and then talking to relatives in, nearby cities and towns like Newton and Brookline, and they've got 9 or 10 inches, and we got rain, and the wind's blowing, and it's all rain. Why? Those are some of the beginnings of my interest. My dad was fascinated with the changing weather. He was actually born on the hottest day in the history of the city of Boston, and that record still stands, Kevin. Just to give you an idea about, you know, some of the things that got me going as a young kid, and you know, always very close family in the Boston area, and everybody was talking about the weather. But my dad, Sam Gilman, was born. They kept him under the bed in with ice cubes to try to keep him from being a little too warm. And the date was actually late on July 3rd to July 4th of 1911. That record still stands.
My goodness.
104 degrees, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Okay. Wow.
Joe, did you have a question?
Well, yeah. I mean, thank you, Rob. I appreciate the accolades earlier. I would say the same to you as we, not just at ATD, but also online all the time, looking towards you for insight on the weather. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really interested in when it comes to weather, and one of the things I'd love your insight on, is kind of seeing storm history. You know, right now we're about to make history, where I think you would agree we will probably...
Oh, we have made history. There's never been anything like this in recorded history.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I...
At least for a 30-day window,
well,
correct?
Well...
No, for a winter.
For a winter?
I mean, the first... If you trace back the earliest diaries of the first settlers that came from Europe into... what was called the Massachusetts Bay Colony back 1620-ish, they wrote about two things primarily, religion and weather. So we've got, you know, 400 years of records, nothing like this.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to get your insight on is one, you know, we're about to exceed not just historic snowfall amounts in, like Kevin said, in a short amount of time, but overall snow totals since records were kept. And, you know, the other thing, too, is being on the coastal, on the coast in a coastal community. I know you live in Hull, so that's another coastal community. You know, we looked at the storm Juno that happened at our first major snowfall of the season. You know, a lot of people were trying to compare it to something. Oh, you know, what type of storm is this? What's it compared to? And a lot of people are comparing it to 91. But what do you see? You know, we did a study at the Coalition when we were appealing the maps that showed the blizzard of 78 wasn't a 1 in 100 year storm, but in fact a recorded 1 in 200 year storm based on records. So what is your insight also, and not just, you know, how we're going through this historic winter, but also historic storms that we may see along the coast throughout the years?
Well, that's what we do here. We follow all of the local weather developments. After I grew up in Boston in the 60s, went to Boston Latin School, then went to Northeastern University to try to understand a little bit more about atmospheric science. I was actually there for 2 years studying earth science and geology. I worked for the U.S. Geological Survey at the time as a co-op student, and my co-op job was working on the very beginnings of what became the Federal Flood Insurance Program.
Oh, wow.
We did surveys in along rivers, the Taunton River, the Canoe River, many of the flooding rivers in Bristol and Plymouth County. And that was the old geological survey. It was 150 Causeway Street, right next to the old Boston Garden. And it was just a great place to understand, you know, some of the complexities of the federal government's responsibilities and the state of physical science and what could be done. From there, I realized I was never going to get the education in meteorology I wanted if I stayed here, because Northeastern University didn't have an atmospheric science program. They had a great professor that taught meteorology 101 and, you know, kind of gave you the idea of what was going on in terms of, you know, it's not just what's happening in Boston, it's the whole planet that matters as far as how our weather's going to be changing. And from there, I was very fortunate to survey some ideas, the very beginnings of meteorology as a science in this part of the world was back in 1885 at the Blue Hill Observatory. A fellow by the name of Abbott Roch, he lived at 5 Commonwealth Avenue, and he wanted to learn more about the atmosphere, so he started flying kites. He traveled all the way down to Blue Hill, and he went up to the top and eventually built a stone building that's still there today. It's the oldest continuously operating weather observatory in North America. And reading that work just really inspired me to find out more. And from there, I found that if I really wanted to study and get a degree in meteorology, I'd have to go to a different school, and I made the decision to go out to central Pennsylvania. That was a long way away from me at the time. It wasn't easy as a co-op student at Northeastern to make that change, but I was hooked. I really wanted to know more about the science. So fortunately, I was able to move to State College, Pennsylvania, and I studied meteorology with people like Dr. Joel Myers, who started AccuWeather, and then I worked as an AccuWeather slave from 2 in the morning until 9 in the morning at $2.50 an hour, drawing weather maps for a couple of years. And, you know, anyone that's been there will share those experiences with you back in those days. It was they had the whole meteorology department from the university to choose from, because anyone would want to work for that kind of a startup company. At the time, they were providing weather for the old WHDH 850 AM. And I remember listening to those reports and being inspired. I mean, it was very different from listening to Don Kent. Don was an amazing broadcaster, an amazing man, but he didn't have the fortune of being able to study meteorology in the 50s and 60s when the science was really starting to burgeon with the weather satellite that was first launched in 1960 and the numerical modeling. So that's where I'm going. It's the numerical modeling, the physical modeling of the atmosphere that really began giving us a different idea about weather forecasting, and that really grew in the 60s and 70s. So when I finished at Penn State, when I graduated, I came back here, my first gig, so to say, the first money I earned in weather forecasting was with the Patriot Ledger. I walked into the office of the editor at the time, Bill Ketter, and I said, come on, you've got to do better than this national weather map and partly cloudy chance of showers every day. And he agreed. He said, is there a better way to do it? That was about a year before USA Today went with their whole back page as a weather page. That's what, the owner of this station, who I'm so fortunate to know all these years and who gave me a chance to work at an amazing station. I mean, you guys know what this is like, and all of our listeners know what WATD, I mean, it's, year after year wins national awards, the Edward R. Murrow Award. There's no station like WATD.
Correct.
And the owner of the station thought that would be great if, I was writing for the Ledger, and why not? We'll feature you doing the weather every day. So ever since then, and that was about the time my son was born, who's now 33 years old, just to give you an idea of how long I've been doing this, said, let's do it. And every day we do the weather, and we do it local, and we do it oftentimes live, and we always have the latest information for people that need to know right here on the South Shore. So as I got more involved with community programs and, what was going on in when I lived in Quincy, the city of Quincy, I've been in Hull with my family now for almost 20 years. This is what inspired me to, get involved in these important issues along our coastline. So I'm just, taking a slow walk because we have a little extra time here, Joe.
Yep.
But that's how I got involved in working with the Beach Management Committee in Quincy and with the Coastal Coalition of different towns. But the storms have a regular history. They happen every so often. There's a frequency to coastal storms and ocean storms. And one of the most difficult, the heavy lifts I had in discussing these matters is that we're so prone to think about tropical storms and hurricanes as being so dangerous and devastating.
Sure.
Because, as a nation, that is a big concern. So much of the nation has had terrible impacts. I mean, the Galveston hurricane, thousands of people were killed in Galveston, Texas in the late 19th century. And the storm that hit Key Largo and, so many terrible tragedies from tropical storms and hurricanes. But here in coastal New England, it's the nor'easter. It's the winter storm. It's the storm that forms on the boundary of cold air and warm air that's so devastating and so much more important, especially here along our coast. And the storm, like the blizzard of 78, like the no-name storm of 91, and WATD won an award for coverage of that storm back in late October, was also known as the Halloween storm of 1991.
Sure.
the storms that we've seen so often in the last 20 years, December of 1992, they're coming with increased frequency. These are the moderate coastal storms. And again, you're hearing more and more now about moderate coastal flooding. You know, it was just wasn't that long ago that people always referred to, well, when a major storm hits, then we're in trouble. No, when a moderate storm hits, I mean, the flooding we had from the blizzard in January that you were talking about with the governor, that was a moderate coastal flood.
Again, we are speaking with Rob Gilman. He is the chief meteorologist here on 95.9 WATD, also co-owner of Precision Weather Forecasting. We have just a couple of minutes left with you. I want to kind of get down to the brass tacks in layman's terms. Why are we seeing storm after storm? Why has this region been hit so hard this winter? Was this long time coming? Is this something that you've been able to read through the weather maps? Is there some occurrence that's taking place why we're seeing this?
Well, we're researching it, and we'll have a better answer for you in the months and years ahead. I can tell you what I'm seeing operationally, because that's what we do. I mean, I just spent the whole day today providing reports detailing exactly how much snow fell over the weekend, you know, whether it was 16.2 inches in Boston or 17 inches in Plymouth, or just, you know, exactly how many, because this makes a big difference. If you're plowing a huge industrial parking lot and you're paying by the inch, you know, this is what we do. We provide certified weather statements of how much snow actually fell, and now we're forecasting for what's coming tomorrow. And we're forecasting, you know, a very small snowfall tomorrow, because we're on the northern edge of this storm, which is very different from the storms we've been having. The storms we've been having, Kevin, have been caused by the subarctic air. And, you know, it's always pretty close to us. You only have to go 300-400 miles to the north, and you're into Quebec, and that is the edge of the heart of the subarctic air. Remember, there's really no daylight for 3-4 months and more around the subarctic toward the pole, and that air just gets colder and colder, whereas in the other direction, 300 miles or so, you're out in the middle of the Atlantic, well, the western edge of the Atlantic Ocean, in the Gulf Stream, or one of the eddies from the Gulf Stream, and the water is 70 degrees. So that's the energy that fuels these storms. And this stretch, the last month or so, we continually get that subarctic air reinforced. It's a part of the polar vortex that just extends down into the eastern Great Lakes and southern New England. And as long as that pattern persists, we have the energy that comes from the difference in the cold air and the warm ocean and the ripples that come along that boundary, the ripples of low pressure, and that's what lifts warm, moist air into cold air. And it's phenomenal how much snow. It's the atmosphere is so efficient at making snowfall in this pattern.
I guess I want to give you a moment to tell folks a little bit about, whether it's somebody at home or somebody who works for a municipality or an insurance company, some of the things, how they can find out more about what you do, because other than what you provide to us, you provide vital information, and you have a group of seasoned professionals who work with you, correct?
Thank you. Yeah, there are seven of us. I'm here pretty much Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bill Guile, who you've seen on New England Cable News, mm-hmm. and Channel 4 and Channel 9 out of New Hampshire, he's pretty much on 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. Jim Manning is with us on weekends. Jim is a senior scientist. Mike Redden on Sundays. Matt Sanders, just a great meteorologist locally. We're all local. We're all living, you know, close by. We just started working with Mike Souza, who's a recent graduate from UMass Lowell. So there, you know, there are seven meteorologists, and this is the way we run our business. There's no other firm like this in this part of the country. Again, I got my start working out in Pennsylvania at AccuWeather, and this is what we do here. We work for 210 cities and towns, including Boston, Worcester, Quincy, Cambridge, many of the universities in the area, including MIT. We provide direct weather information on call. They can call us anytime. We provide information online. Our website is snowandice.com, all spelled out, mm-hmm. snowandice.com. You can reach us through that website or through WATD's website. But again, I want to provide information for our listeners. That's my mainstay. And whenever I hear anybody say that they listen to ATD, you know, it's, there's no charge. I'm more than eager to follow up with what I provide. I only have, you know, usually 30 or 40 seconds to do 5 days of weather on the radio. It's all so quick. And, yep. You know, people now look at their phone, and you just can't get information that's local and precise that way. And, you know, everybody wants to provide weather information because people, you know, businesses know that's going to get advertised. People want to know weather, so that's why you'll see so much weather information everywhere. But it's not necessarily updated, local, or relevant, and that's what we provide.
Right, and it's not just looking out the window either, correct?
Well, that helps. but that's like the keyhole approach. You know, it's like before you go in a room, you just look through the keyhole. And again, I grew up in the city, so I'm pretty careful about doing things like that before I go in a room. You never know who's behind the door. The atmosphere weighs 6 quadrillion tons. That's 16 zeros, 6 quadrillion tons. That's what you've got to figure out if you're trying to decide how many inches of snow are going to fall on the South Shore tomorrow. So looking through the keyhole, you get a little, you know, snippet of what's going on. That's what it's like looking out the window. It's beautiful, and you really should look out the window, but you really can't see all of what's going on in the global atmosphere.
Rob, we want to thank you so much for sharing some insight as to what you do on a daily basis here and your team. And we're going to have you back on in a couple of months when it's warmer, and you can kind of give us an idea of the different change that we're seeing as we're going from this, you know, the winter and the jet stream with the polar vortex to, you know, getting the warmer days ahead.
The warmer days ahead of, not this week, but right. You're right. We have four seasons, at least four seasons here on the South Shore. Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Have a great evening. There he is, Rob Gilman, and be sure to tune in for his forecast right here on 95.9 WATD. We step aside, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Mr. Chris Siegel. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.